The 24th Problem by Janiah Riley. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 16. A Rotten Core at Her Heart. 2219. Common Earth Era. Seaport District. New York Metropolitan Administration Sector.
Jane stared down at the map on her vidscreen, her mind slowly turning around what she'd discovered. She grabbed the bottle of Shine and took a drink directly from it, feeling the cheap alcohol burn as it went down. It steadied her nerves a little bit, eventually, but didn't take away from the strange feeling that was crawling up inside of her stomach, a feeling she couldn't just blame on bad chicken at this point. The maps were kept up to date as much as was practical, some anonymous group of tech heads that were dedicated to warning citizens about the outside. Sometimes things would fluctuate. Patches of it would come and go for reasons no one had been able to figure out for decades. This wasn't that. This was one of the largest, most well-established... Jane didn't even think patch was the right word, more like sector. An entire sector of outside that had, according to the information on record, been there since before the database was even started. So what were these idiots up to? Jane muttered to herself, flipping over to the case file info. Not a lot to go on, not a lot about who had commissioned the job or what they were interested in that these people had been into. Just a bunch of college kids. Well, maybe a bit older than that, but it didn't matter much. Had to be either rich or very interesting to some bad people if they had this kind of a job out of them. Maybe they'd been trying their hand at exploring the outside, looking for something valuable. They wouldn't have been the first 20-somethings who thought they could find some way to get rich there. It always ended the same bad way, with bodies that could never be properly recovered. Of course, there were exceptions to the rule. At least one that Jane was aware of. She didn't want to do it. Jane put her head in her hands. Maybe another swig of the Shine would help. She lifted her head and brought the bottle to her lips again.
"No time like the present," muttered around the burning rim of the Shine.
No way around it.
Gutsy Gumshoe. Today at 8:21 p.m.
"Can I ask you something? I know you said not to message you anymore, but I promise this isn't a personal thing."
Golgotha's Terror, today at 8:21 p.m.
"I'm of the mind that I should just block you right away. I left this line of communication open for emergencies, not to be used willy-nilly as a personal avenue."
Gutsy Gumshoe, today at 8:22 p.m.
"It's an emergency, and it's important. Can I call secure?"
Golgotha's Terror, today at 8:26 p.m.
"Fine, but make it snappy, Miss Crocker. We're not on speaking terms."
She sighed with relief and swiped over to the secure calling application. A moment later, she saw Jake English's face appear on the screen. The man looked like he'd been hitting some of the Shine himself that evening, haggard and poorly shaven.
"What is it, Jane? I'm not in the mood for any banter tonight, or any other."
There was a certain viciousness behind the words that she supposed she'd earned once. She bit back her desire to snap at him.
"You said it was an emergency."
"Yes, it has to do with a case."
"I'm hanging up now, Jane."
"Wait!"
She leaned forward and grabbed the sides of the viewscreen, not liking how desperate her voice was. But he hadn't hung up yet.
"I wouldn't have called you if it wasn't important. I know that you wanted to be left alone."
No response for a while. Then a heavy sigh.
"Fine. I'll give you a couple minutes to explain yourself, and then I'm hanging up this call and going back to watching my video."
She took a deep breath and pushed aside the slightly tipsy feeling creeping up on her from the Shine. No way around it.
"Jake, I've got a weird eyes-only job, and I need your help on it. It's for missing college kids."
"Well, why should I care? Isn't that what you told me once?"
That stung, hurt even. Jane winced and nodded. "Okay, I kind of deserved that, but they went missing in the outside. A shrunk.
Again, why should I care? Jane, people go in there from time to time and they don't come back out again. You know this as well as anyone. Natural order of the world.
Not you, though, right? A long pause. Too long.
What do you mean?
Jake asked, his voice heavy with suspicion.
What are you talking about?
No sense in dragging any of this out. She'd had her suspicions for years. Little things he'd said or done, rumors she'd heard in various circles. It was all very subtle. But she was paid to ferret out subtlety. I heard rumors you've been in the outside. She saw the look on his face, shock but not denial. Right on the nose on that one.
What are you talking about?
She sighed and closed her eyes tightly. Jake, I might have been an utter shit to you when we were together, but I know when you're lying, you're bad at it.
You admit you weren't a good partner?
His voice had risen a bit. He sounded almost intrigued by this development. Well, they hadn't spoken in a year, and the last time had been unpleasant. Yes, I'm not too proud for that. It was all the way a lie. She was proud, and she was stubborn. She'd bulldozed through the relationship like she owed nothing to anyone, and in a lot of ways, she supposed she still didn't think she did. But there was no sense in lying too big. And yes, I'm coming to you because I need something, because there's four people out there in the outside that I don't know how to help. Because you're the only person I know who I even suspect could help.
We can't talk about this over the line.
Jake dropped his voice.
Is it secure or not? This needs to be face to face, and it needs to be now.
Wait.
Crocker!
He only called her that when he was angry.
You can either meet me in an hour at our place, or you can find another way. I know your office is close by. Don't give me any horse hockey about this.
Fine. Jane grimaced as the call went dead.
Fine.
Division North District. New York Metropolitan Administration Sector.
Jane supposed that for most couples, even ex-couples, their spot would be someplace romantic, a restaurant maybe, or a bar. Maybe someplace that had nice scenery. Well, they'd been to plenty of restaurants and bars, and neither of them had the kind of pull you needed for nice scenery in this town. But for them, the term had meant something else. The place where it started and where it ended. An archway in an area that had long since gone to rot, surrounded by a sprawling combination of park and makeshift settlement in the northern part of the Division District. 150 years ago, it had still been called Washington Square Park, then it had been Division Park, then it was just another part of the ever-shifting sprawl of the district. People still lived here, but the historic appeal of the place had been largely replaced with the ever-shifting threat of the outside and the near-swamp conditions that made it a bug-ridden nightmare to live in. Lights were strung up haphazardly, providing spotty illumination in the darkness. Wasters would sometimes lurk in those shadows, looking for tourists to pick off, but Jane was used to that. The fact she was carrying a loaded pistol helped. By the time Jane got to the spot by the archway, Jake was already there, sitting on the steps and tossing small pebbles around. He looked up as he heard her coming, his face still looking about the same as it had over the vidscreen. Jane didn't really feel comfortable sitting next to him, so she just stood there, looking down awkwardly.
Just to be clear, Jane, I'm not doing this because I like you.
She grimaced at that.
I'm not doing it because I think what you did was justified. In fact, I'm quite sure I hate you.
Her face burned. She wasn't sure if it was from embarrassment or anger or both. Finally, Jake sighed heavily and looked down at his hands.
But to be clear, I find the whole idea of a missing person's case taking you into the outside strangers will get out. And I'm not entirely convinced you wouldn't try to go there on your own. In spite of who you are, I don't want to see you dead. Dead people can't make up for what they've done.
I do still believe I'm going to do that. Make up for what I've done. She looked down at him. He looked pathetic like this. That was what she told herself, what she needed to tell herself. This was a mistake.
I'll take 15% of what they're paying you to.
He smiled a little bit. Jake English could be blisteringly naive at times, but not as much as he wanted people to believe.
Or I suppose you could try your luck on your own. Why should I even believe you can really do this?
He raised an eyebrow at her, and his unshaven jaw twitched.
Crocker, are you kidding me? You called me for a reason.
This was true. But now that she was standing in front of him, she wasn't sure. How could someone this pathetic be able to accomplish something that everyone said wasn't possible except? He reached into his pocket and drew out a small, oblong piece of something. It looked kind of like a stone or a piece of metal, but it didn't look entirely right. Jake held it up towards Jane, and she saw it shimmer and blink. Not a trick of the light, but a slight warping of the space around the object.
What the hell is this?
She reached down to touch the object. It was colder than she expected, especially in the humidity of the night, like touching the coil on an air conditioner.
This is from
the outside. From the last time I went, I'm surprised you never ran into this, or your time on Metpol. She didn't want to admit it, but she had heard rumors she was convinced were bullshit, stories about people trading in artifacts found in the outside, objects that had strange and inconsistent properties, volatile objects prone to disappearing without a trace sometimes, rumors about collectors who would pay a fortune for these things, and rumors about the kind of people who went searching for them. It was too much for Jane to believe. The very idea was absurdity itself. And she'd seen plenty of con men eager to claim they'd done the impossible. But here it was, the impossible at her fingertips. He snorted and drew the object back into his pocket.
You thought the stories were all bull, Pucky? Because that's how you look at everything. Everyone is a dumb burn-off except for you. Everyone's a stupid mark in the making except for Jane Crocker.
Who's too smart for anything? Unless it comes to the dirt that's right under her own fingers.
That's not fair, she wanted to protest, but her heart wasn't in it. Maybe it was just the heat draining her, maybe something more.
Okay, you're obviously the expert here. What next?
Next we walk up the divided bits and you buy me a proper drink at the Surge, then we talk more.
She nodded. Fine. They were halfway up the street at the Surge, a bar that sat on the street called Broadway, near the park itself, when Jane realized they were being followed. It looked like two men and a woman who kept herself back from the other's wasters, probably apex predators among the tourists that frequented the area.
Hey!
The first man ran up in front of them, grinning broadly.
Pretty lady and a pretty man, you two fine out of towners got some spare cred for us.
He whistled sharply and the other man walked over. He was dragging some length of pipe along, clattering it on the broken pavement of the sidewalk.
Some pay for us, anyhow. What you got? My fellow, I've got a bit of spare.
We don't have anything, Jane interrupted. Go crawl back to your holes. The first man laughed at that.
Oh, Miss Boss wants to push us around. You're corporal, right? Out for a crazy night in the slums.
Jane felt the anger surging forward, the white-hot blinders that slipped around her. She glanced sideways at Jake, saw him shaking his head, gritted her teeth, deep breath.
Look, I know you're looking for an easy mark, but I'm not. Let this idiot give you a few bucks for your trouble and let it go.
He walked closer to Jake, nearly within touching distance now, and spread his arms out wide.
Oh, no, this got personal now. He got an attitude, and
before he could finish the sentence, she stepped in around his arms and planted a heavy elbow to his nose. All her weight behind it, no time to react to that, she followed up with a knee and another heavy blow to the side of his head. He might have height on her, but she had weight and compact musculature and bone density. From the sound of his nose crunching as blood began to seep out, he went down, sprawling, and she came down on his arm, pinning him to the ground with a knee. The second man stepped back, a shocked look on his face, pipe clattering to the ground, and from the corner of her eye, Jane noticed movement. Without thinking, she reached to her holster and drew out the pistol she carried, aiming at the woman who'd been slinking closer and closer, looked like she was holding a knife.
I will kill you if you come any closer.
Dead calm inside. It was unnerving and reassuring at the same time, always an exercise in contradictions. To emphasize the fact, she thumbed back the hammer on the double-action pistol, drop the knife, and run in the other direction. The woman did exactly as she suggested, and from the sound of the footsteps going in the other direction, the second man had already decided to abandon his friend to the whims of fate. From the ground, the first man, now bleeding onto the pavement, gurgled.
"You met Paul? Not anymore."
Before she realized what she was doing, the gun was aimed at his head. "You should rethink your line of war."
"Crocker!"
She heard Jake shout and turned to see him standing there shaking.
"Stop it this instant! You're not in the goddamn special division anymore!"
She blinked, felt the gun in her hand, looked back down at the man bleeding on the ground, finally. She grunted and decocked the pistol, putting it back in its holster. She leaned over, close as she could without losing her purchase on his arm.
"You're lucky we didn't meet 5 years ago." And then she stood up. "If you follow us, I'll kill you," she said plainly. "You might want to lie there and think for a bit."
"Crooker, Jane, please."
Pleading almost, she hated hearing that, but at the same time it twisted something around in her, an awful reminder of where she'd come from.
"Fine, let's go. But I hope you're not bullshitting me about this."
The bar, the Surge, was situated in an old building that ironically predated the Surge that it was named for. Back before the Calamity, it had been some kind of restaurant. The only surviving evidence was the signage that depicted a stylized hamburger. Some of the interior furnishings had been made to look like an old diner, but Jane doubted any of it was authentic. They were south of the Divide, but this place had some money put into it, a real tourist joint. They served something fancier than shine here for sure. At the door, security stopped them and asked to see ID. Jane flashed her registered private detective badge, and that was enough to avoid them asking follow-up questions or searching them. Maybe not the same kind of pull she'd had back in the old days, but the RPD meant plenty in places like this.
"After that little performance," Jake said sourly, "you're going to tell me a couple stiff drinks. Consider it an advance on my fee for this."
She wanted to say something, but it wasn't a good time. She was willing to admit that her reaction had been a little over the top. Instinct took over in cases like that, even if those instincts weren't necessarily good. By way of apology, she ordered a shot of pre-Calamity whiskey that cost as much as an entire case of shine, and a couple bottles of some local artisan beer that was probably brewed in some waster's basement. The bar wasn't exactly quiet, but they were hardly the only patrons. So Jake selected a quiet booth in the back where the lighting was low and the noise went down to a dull roar.
"So are you planning to actually give me some more details, or is this just a chance for you to relive all the worst parts of your past?"
Jake asked, his voice positively dripping with sarcasm.
"Because I think I'm going to finish this drink and then go home and block you."
"Fine," she said bitterly.
"If you let me show you what's going on."
She took out her handheld and swiped the information onto the screen.
"This is everything I've got. A lot of nothing, but their last known location is..."
"I know that place." Jake's voice had a disconcerting quality to it, and he wasn't touching his drinks. Finally, he grabbed the whiskey and downed it in one gulp.
"Is this real? 4 people went in there."
"I don't know, Jake, that's what it says."
"But you're the expert." "I'm the expert in the sense that I've gone on expeditions and I know how to get in and out safely. You don't just dance into the outside. You have to know how to approach everything. It's an exercise in constant vigilance and taking one step at a time. You can't rush through anything or it will kill you."
"Okay, so?" Jane could feel the anger bubbling up again.
"So what's the problem then? You'll help me go in there safely. I promise I'll listen to you and follow your lead. Then we'll probably find their bodies and I can report back what happened. Do you think most missing persons cases end up with a positive retrieval around here?"
She felt like laughing at that. Clearance rate on jobs that ended up on her desk was about 70-30 dead to alive.
"Now you don't get it. This isn't just the outside. This is the outside. Rumors are all around that this is where it started. Hardly anyone is stupid enough to try to go in, and the people who do, they don't come out again."
"Fine, I'll figure it out myself." She started to get up, but she felt Jake's hand on her arm, not concerned so much, more like a warning.
Why does this mean so much to you, Jane?
She stopped. Why did it mean so much to her? Because Roxy had brought her the job, because of the money, because it was a chance to try and balance the cosmic scales a little bit?
Because it feels all kinds of wrong, and I need to know why.
He sighed. Then gestured at the empty shot glass on the table. Fine.
I'll do what I can to help you, but you're going to need to buy me another one of those. And then you're going to put all the cards out on the table and see what kind of hand you're working with.
For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Janiah Riley. The music is Cycles, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can also find other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.